Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com. Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey everyone, before we get into the episode, Matt and I wanted to tell you about a quick competition that we are having with a few other filmmaking podcasts where we are seeing who can get the most iTunes review for the month of May. So, if you want to help us win a competition, then please leave us an iTunes review. It can be positive, it can be incredibly negative, whatever you want. Leave us an iTunes review in the month of May, from May 1st to May 31st.
So help us out. Our self-esteem depends on it.
Hey, welcome to the 160th episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, screenwriting, and directing. This episode is brought to you by patron Pablo Gallo. I'm Warren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we have Kendall Goldberg. She's the director of When Jeff Tried to Save the World. She's got a ton of awesome insight about what it takes to make that first feature.
She started working on her movie when she was 19 in film school at Chapman.
And also we talk about how Kendall got some big names attached to her very first feature, including John Heder, Napoleon Dynamite himself.
I'm also personally like very inspired by how she came up with the idea for her movie, because you know, I think a lot of times we try to like look for that stroke of genius, but she kind of just figured it out.
She's an awesome inspiration. She just went and shot it. She's going to tell us all about everything she learned and then some. But before we get to that, let's talk a little bit about our Patreon. Our Patreon page, patreon.com/justshootitpod, is where you can go to throw a little bit of cash our way and get some cool rewards and also show your support for the show. Your money goes towards things like paying Jay, our editor, who edits every single episode, goes towards website maintenance and all that other stuff, all the stuff that you can imagine it costs money to do on a podcast. And so it's a great way to show your support. Also, hat update, merch update. I tweeted out about how I wanted hats, and a listener, Curtis, tweeted back. We've been trading emails. Oren, did you see he sent us some hat designs? Those are actuals. He's going to mail them over to us.
It's pretty cool. Man, we got listeners in the hat business.
In the hat biz. That's going to be a thing that you get at a certain tier, basically.
Oh, cool. Yes, let's do that.
You know, the show is growing thanks to the money that you are submitting to us, and it's genuinely appreciated, and we're trying to figure out fun ways for you to kind of show your support.
It's really awesome, and it makes a big difference to us, and I mean, in a way, it does help keep the show going, seeing that kind of like excitement about our show.
Yeah, without a doubt. Well, without further ado, let's hop into our conversation with Kendall Goldberg. Kendall Goldberg, welcome to Just Shoot It.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You made the movie. I'm going to mess it up if I try. So
Jeff really wants to save the world.
No, close.
Jeff already wanted to save the world.
When Jeff tried to save the world.
Yeah. When Jeff tried to save the world.
When Matt and Oren tried to say the name right.
Kendall, can you give us the log line for your movie?
Yeah, it's about a manager of a bowling alley that tries to save it from going out of business.
Cool. Perfect. And I read that you wanted to set your movie in a bowling alley, and then you kind of figured out the character from that.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, in the past, that's kind of how I've come up with ideas. I've thought about a location that stood out to me, and for no reason other than the fact that I thought it was cool, I was like, let's make a movie in a bowling alley. I told my writing partner, I don't think there was any specific moment or anything that made me that's what happened. And then we were like, okay, what kind of characters come in and out of a bowling alley, who, you know, spends the most time there? And then where does the conflict come from? So then we were like, okay, a manager has a lot of control, but doesn't have their name on the lease. So like, that's where like some conflict could come in, and it just spiraled.
Can only get 9 pins down.
Yeah. You know, he doesn't even bowl once in the film.
Oh, really?
Oh, really?
That's pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Saving that.
It's not a bowling movie.
That's called smart producing. Yeah. I'm not wasting time waiting for the ball to go all the way down that lane.
We did have to do that for Jim O'Hara's character, though. Oh. We had to film a strike, and oh boy. we were there way later than we thought
just
we'd be.
Just get a real tight insert.
Well, that's what we did, but like it was like a dolly on the lane, and the lanes are all greasy, so like you have to like wipe it down to a degree, and then you have to, the DP was the one like dropping the ball in front of the camera as we like push in, and I mean it took like 20 something times to get
So you're giving me flashbacks of Big Lebowski behind the scenes footage. I think they have like little robo cars to get those shots.
Is it a regular dolly?
We just put like a fisher on the lane.
Whoa. And they didn't care?
They didn't mind?
Well,
you had like rubber wheels or something?
Dale. Shout out to Dale, the owner of the bowling alley, who literally opened up his home to us and let us like live there and do whatever we wanted. We were respectful, of course, but no, it was socks or bowling shoes.
Wow.
We like degreased the lane first, but.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
First, we should also mention John Heder. Heater. I bet he's so mad at me already.
Good way to remember is like you want to stay away from the cold. You use a
John Heater.
Yeah.
So John Heater is kind of your main character. He's Jeff, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there are kind of two obvious questions, right? How'd you get John? We'll answer that one second. But where's this bowling alley and how did you get it?
So flashback to I was in college. I want to say like a sophomore or junior by the time I started looking for bowling alleys.
At Chapman Film School.
At Chapman, right? And all of my people that I imagined shooting, we would shoot the film together, were at Chapman. So I was like, oh, you know, we're around LA or greater LA, SoCal area. So my natural instinct was to look for a bowling alley there.
Did you go to Yorba Linda? That's my hometown. And they have a bowling alley, and it's pretty close to
Chapman. Do you know what it's called?
I think it's called, like, Yorba Linda Bowl.
I think I did go, yeah. I have them all starred on my Google Maps, like, all the bowling alleys.
If you're driving by, you're like...
Oh. Yeah. But so my friend Grayson and I got in his minivan, and we drove, you know, every, like, weekend for, like, a long time, like several months. We drove around looking at bowling alleys, scouting bowling alleys. Some people would let us in, some people wouldn't. Some would let us in and say no photos, which was like, what? Like it was like no one was there. Why can't we take any photos? It's a bowling alley. So anyway, like I spent a long time looking for the perfect bowling alley with the perfect feel, something that wouldn't cost us a fortune and our whole budget. And I went to about 36, 37 in and around Los Angeles. And then...
And you already had a budget, like a number in mind of how much you wanted to make the movie for?
Yeah. I didn't have the money, but I had the number in mind.
You're like, I bet I could get this much money going.
Yeah. I did so many budget passes and I had like 8 different people I knew, like who had more knowledge than I had at the time, like do a pass of the budget for me. And it was always around the same number that I had originally said when I started working on it. So then like I went home for winter break, I think like my junior year of college, and was like pretty bummed I hadn't found a bowling alley yet. We did actually, I don't know if I've told this story recently, but we did find one bowling alley in somewhere around LA, can't remember exactly where. And they were like, you can shoot here, but we're closing the place in July or in August. So you'd have to shoot June or July. And I was like, oh my God, we got to like get the money, get everything together. And they were like, you just can't, it's very secretive. You can't tell anybody that we're closing because none of the employees and none of the regulars knew, which I was like, oh, that's kind of weird. Cause that's like that's our story. Is like John's character, Jeff, tries to keep it from, or he wants to tell the employees and then the owner's like, no, let's keep it from them. So yeah, we, you know, there was a point in time where I was like, can we get everything together fast enough? But it didn't happen. And then I went home over winter break.
And you should have emailed all the employees and been like, hey.
Yeah, I was like, you guys.
Just letting you know. You might want to.
You better look for other jobs.
Yeah.
Also, stay tuned.
Yeah. But yeah, I went home. I went to like 3 bowling alleys in Chicago. The third and final one I went to was the place. Dale took me around, showed me everything. And I knew it. Like I was editing our behind the scenes footage yesterday. And I found a video of me like basically just like crying, spinning around on the lanes, like filming myself looking like an idiot. Because I was like, I found it. This
you did
the place.
It. You found
yeah.
What made this bowling, what made bowling alley 39 or 40 or whatever it was like special? Like what were you looking for?
I mean, first of all, I was looking for something that had the right size because I knew that like with a limited budget and with like the world that I wanted to create, like it would be better to have something that's kind of like condensed and not like a 40 lane double sided bowling alley, which is like Chateau 39 sure. In Koreatown, you know, which I go all the time. It's amazing. But I needed something smaller, but not too small. I found bowling alleys with like 8 lanes too small. I wanted it to feel like worn down, sort of like very lived in, but like in a good way. You
it's
know?
Next to the Chuck E. Cheese, basically.
Yeah. Exactly.
It's like a family place, character. Not like a Lucky
yeah.
Strike.
Yeah. Yeah. And so when I walked into this place, not only did it smell like cigarettes and beer and just like had that feeling, but...
What's the spray they put in the shoes? Like Lysol or something?
Yeah, it's like something. Shoe spray. I just call it shoe spray. I don't know if it has a name. It smelled a lot of that while I was there.
It's just water.
Yeah. Yeah. Actually, yeah. It's
actually
air.
Sweat.
Yeah. But I mean, it was really cool because when he took me behind the pin setting machines, he showed me like carvings of people who used to work there in the 50s or 60s when there were no machines. Like they were the machines.
Right.
What?
Yeah. Yeah. And it was
by
crazy.
Hand.
Yeah.
Pin
yeah,
setters.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Which for our premiere, by the way, we did a premiere in Chicago, our after party, we went to a bowling alley that was like, men in the back like setting up the pins and then like a lady like writing down the score and yelling at you
instead of getting like being a newsie you would like set pins
right
and
the other crazy thing I had a concept art drawn by this concept artist I went to school with and it was the exact same layout which if you've been to bowling alleys you know they're all very different and you know they have similar things like an arcade but like they're all placed in different areas and yeah, there's a lot of variety, but this was exactly the same.
Just so. Exactly.
What you manifested it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah.
I want to ask, actually, what do you say to the owner, the small business owner of a place like this where you need to like really inhabit the space for like days and days, right?
And you have no relationship with this person,
yeah.
right?
Right. You're, like, no relationship. Them, yeah, yeah, actually, yeah. And not even that. Like, I just walked in and like hoped that he was there. Yeah, I mean, there's something special about shooting in Chicago and you know, a suburb of Chicago, a small town. They're not like jaded by the film industry
sure.
yet.
They're like, oh, you're making a movie.
Right. Right. So that was another big thing is like, eventually I changed my mind. I was like, I want to go home and shoot this because I know that I have a lot of resources there, family, friends, sure. everybody who will lend a hand because the Midwest is just great and yeah. everyone wants to help. But also like, they don't get a lot of movie shooting around there. Right. So, you know, that was part of the draw. I was like, oh yeah, we're shooting a movie in your business. And then on top of that, it was like, Dale is a huge Napoleon Dynamite fan.
Oh,
and he
rad.
Also loves Jim O'Hare, Parks and Rec. So that helped, of course.
Oh, yeah. Did you have John attached while you were?
Honestly, I can't remember exactly how it went down. I just remember at a point I mentioned that to, I must have, cause I mentioned it to Dale mm-hmm. and he was like, oh yeah, that's cool.
Yeah. Done.
Yeah. But like, you know, it was hard cause I kept having to say, if we shoot this here, like I'm going to need to close down your business for like 2 weeks, like two and a half weeks. Like,
but can't you do like day shoots and open it up at night?
We could, but I was like, the way I want to do this is like production design. I just want to have everything there. And I think it would be really, really difficult. I mean,
to move in and out.
Right. Yeah. To move in and out. Yeah. So he was really generous with that and was like soft wrap every night, except for one. There was like some police officer league mm-hmm. one night. We had to like shove everything into a closet. But yeah, no, I mean, he was great. And another thing that happened was, well, we can talk more about this, but I did shoot a proof of concept for it with the same cast in the same bowling alley a year before I shot the feature.
Fascinating.
And yeah. I was really worried that he was, because he was so excited for us to be there. And it was only a 4-day shoot, but I was so worried that we were going to totally ruin it.
Yeah, once you realize, like, oh, wait, oh, man.
Yeah, he's like, this is what a film
like
is.
Like a bunch of people with all this heavy machinery in my livelihood, like my place of business. Yeah, it would be easy to get scared off, you know.
That's what I was afraid was going to happen. So, like, every morning I was like, guys, be super respectful. Like, we always have to clean ourselves. Like, don't walk
the lanes. Past that line, foul line.
Unless you're wearing bowling shoes. Like, I was, like, very serious about it. But then, like, the day we wrapped or the day after, Dale texted me. He's like, when are you guys coming back for the feature? And was like, he had so much fun.
That's cool.
Yeah.
That's really rad.
The bowling alley probably says, like, as seen in...
They do. He has posters all over. He has like signed bowling pins. Yeah. And we have like photos. He's newspaper clippings. It's great.
It's been kind of a while since we've had a filmmaker on who did the we call it like the hometown feature, right? It's like that you're in that little grace period where like you're still like kind of in or around school, you know? So like cash isn't necessarily quite as pressing, you know, you're used to being broke and like you can get a crew together and kind of like go to Chicago for a little bit. Did you end up bringing your Chapman friends along, or how did that work?
I did, yeah. I couldn't bring as many as I wanted to, but I brought my DP, my script supervisor, my key grip, my dolly grip was, he didn't go to Chapman, but he was like, he's from LA and he's a friend. My Steadicam op.
Yeah.
Production designer?
No, and everyone else was Chicago. Everyone else, I mean, Chicago has great crew. Right. But
it's a great hometown to have, I suppose, right?
Yeah, definitely. And but there were just some people that I went to school with who were like, you know, my best friends and so utterly talented that I wanted them to be a part of it.
My hometown is Orange County, in Orange County.
Oh, okay.
And I always think of Orange County as a place that's like, it's right next to LA, but nobody shoots there. Have you ever shot in Orange County?
Except all Chapman films.
Well, right. So that, I was curious about that when you said that like people in this area are like jaded about film shoots. You find that to be true in Orange County also?
Yes and no. I think especially when you say it's a student film, they're like, we have this database for Chapman that's like a list of locations that have just been totally, they're off the table at this point. Because so many films I've shot at this house. Yeah.
That's really
and then
funny.
There's like also a list of like, you know, this film guy loves, he like welcomes, you know, film students. So, I mean, it's a hit or miss, really. I mean, generally people are pretty nice and open to it. The city of Orange is not great to us.
Oh, really?
Oh, interesting. Yeah,
because we're in the town of Orange in Orange County. And yeah, Chapman itself, which is really weird, but Chapman University does not let us shoot on campus very easily, which is just so ridiculous. Yeah, like when there's like
true
full
in
sets.
SC too?
Yeah.
And, like, you need just permits run around with cameras and everything. Oh, it's a big process.
Yeah, they're trying to like teach you the right way to do it.
Oh, come on. Yeah.
I know.
So annoying.
Yeah, it's kind of a bummer.
Yeah.
But when you do get to shoot there, it's free.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. I guess I think it's like real fascinating how you came up with like the location first idea. Like I've definitely heard of people saying, my friend Maddie Samita, who I doubt listens to the podcast, but he said like his way he generates ideas is he like writes a list of worlds he wants to explore. So his dad was a watercress farmer in Hawaii.
Huh. Whoa.
And he's like, I always wanted to, you know, set a movie that takes place on a watercress farm. And he was like really into football in high school, but he was like the president of the chess club or something. And so he has a story about like the president of the chess club becoming like the strategic like offense coordinator or something for the football team. Like kind of, and then, you know, you hear from other people that it's like all about character first.
But well, have to have a good character. It's just, where does the seed start?
Right.
I mean, assumed your like dad owned a bowling alley or something.
That's what most people said. Like everyone in the Q&A.
Yeah, why not her mom?
We're like,
or her mom.
Or my mom. Yeah. Or my sister.
Yeah. What's wrong with kids owning bowling alleys?
What I'm saying.
Everyone in the Q&As for like all of our festival screenings, like, I mean, obviously this question makes complete sense, but everybody asks like, what's your affiliation to bowling? Did you grow up bowling? Mm-hmm. Like, does somebody in your family own a bowling? I was like, no, I don't know. It just happened. And like,
Did you like to bowl?
Not particularly. Now I mean, do.
It is kind of odd that you chose a bowling alley.
Oh, for sure. I mean, don't doubt
there's
that.
There's a cool aesthetic to it, right? Yeah. Like that can be the answer, you know?
Yeah, I mean, now I spend a lot of time in bowling alleys. Like, the last 3 years of my life have just been, like, bowling. People invite me bowling all the time because they know I'm going to want to go. I'm thinking about starting a league in the fall.
But you weren't, like, at a bowling alley and you were like, oh, I think it would be cool to set a movie here. Because that's, like, whenever I go to the dentist, I'm always like, you know, it's, like, one of the rare times in my life when I'm just, like, in my head thinking and, like, I have no screen to look at or anything. And I'm like, the pain and like the discomfort. Like, I want to make a movie about this.
I always think about my dad is my dentist. And I always think about when I'm like back in the chair. I mean, he's like there's a dental hygienist cleaning my teeth, right? And I like, you can just, there's this point of view shot of like them like digging tools into your mouth.
Yeah, the visuals are so good.
Wait, right? You guys wear a GoPro when you go to the dentist, right?
Oh, absolutely. Strap one to my chest, one to my forehead.
Yeah. I just eat mine, actually.
It's like my
big surprise.
It's like my dash cam, my dentist dash cam, in case anything freaky happens.
Yeah.
I was at the dentist once and she was like filling a cavity or something and she goes, oops.
Oh, no.
I was like, that's like the number one thing your dentist shouldn't say.
You don't want to hear that.
No. Yeah.
It's funny you say that about the like locations thing, because that's happened in the past. That's how I've come up with ideas. But now, like the next few things I'm doing, not like that at all. Didn't think about a location. I call them glimmers, really. They're like just little glimmers of an idea. Like you close your eyes, you see like a young boy in like a sushi restaurant.
Yeah. You like, get an impression, like a little something. Yeah. A little glimmer. I love that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, like I've had that image for like a long time.
The kid at the sushi shop?
Yeah. Like a young boy, like with the like headband on, like behind the counter, like working at a sushi shop.
I had one time I was driving and I like stopped at a stop sign and there was like this like older Asian lady with like a stick, like a walking blind stick, and like a little girl, it must have been like 7 or something. And like she was walking and the little girl was like holding her hand and then the like older woman gave her walking stick to like the little girl. Like I had just assumed that the little girl was walking with like her blind grandma, but it was like actually an old woman walking with her like blind granddaughter or something, like showing her how to use the stick. And I was like, oh, I feel like there's a story there.
Yeah,
for sure.
Anyway, I'm going to In-N-Out. But I feel like, those glimmers do happen.
Now do I get to ask my John Heder?
Okay, whatever. You cast John Heder.
Before he started, you asked how to pronounce his last name. I said so Heder. Far.
You guys, I'm so bad at this.
Matt's a little under the weather.
I'm like,
it's okay. Allergies and colds, you know.
Yeah. Everyone is dying to know. This is your first feature. Had you graduated film school yet or no?
When I was, I started production right after I graduated.
Yeah. So you're like in prep. You're like in development. As you're a student, like everyone's like, oh my God, I'm so jealous. How did it happen?
Wait, are you taking math tests and English classes at God, the same time?
Oh my God, I finished that my freshman year.
Yeah, they don't make you do any real school in film school, man. Yeah.
Film school, there's no real classes?
I mean, I finished. Yeah. I came in with credits.
Yeah.
I was like decently smart.
Like you don't have to take any math classes for sure.
I had to do like one.
Yeah.
But, and then like a science GE.
I took like 5 history classes and I was an engineering major.
Horrible.
How is that? Okay.
Yeah, you should have taken film history classes.
Yes, that's why they call me well-rounded. Nothing to do with my belly.
No, I know. I mean, like those classes do make you more well-rounded. All I did was like watch movies.
Right. Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
But so while you were watching movies, you were also getting a hold of movie stars, right? So how did that happen?
Yeah. Well, John specifically... we had enough seed money from like potential investors that then like invested in the feature to hire a casting director, which I thought was a necessity. Mm-hmm. Have now learned from my experiences that maybe it's not as much as I thought to cast the leads.
If you're going to just to offers, it's not.
Yeah, no, totally. And that's what we ended up doing. But to start, we had this casting director on board, and he set up auditions. So John came in and auditioned one day, and his agents just read the script and were like, hey, we'd love for him to come in.
That's so interesting, though, because, you know, you hear the rumors about him in particular, and there's a handful of other actors out there that are like, yeah, I want to do indies. I want, like, you know... nothing's too small. Like, let me go do it. Like, I'm going to take a chance on filmmakers. This is right. That's how we got to start. Right. So it makes sense. Right.
Exactly. This is, I mean, it's kind of weird because like the more I hear his story about Napoleon, the more I'm like, this kind of mirrors me, because mm-hmm. they all were film students together at BYU, and they made it like right after they graduated, and it was a short first. Mine wasn't a short, it wasn't meant to be a short first, but mm-hmm. theirs was like Peluca, the short, and then like they, Jared has sort of transformed it into Napoleon, but it was just like a really similar story. And so like, yeah, he took a chance on me for sure.
Yeah.
But I had not seen Napoleon Dynamite when he came in.
Oh, awesome.
My two producers at the time, who were like friends from Chapman, were helping me get it started. And they, of course, loved Napoleon. And mm-hmm. I knew him from Blades of Glory. Mm-hmm. But that was really my like John Heder film.
Yeah, yeah. I always say it's kind of nice to not know the thing that makes a person famous. Because you're not starstruck at all. You're not like, oh my God, Napoleon just walked in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and John is just like a really cool guy. He came in, he auditioned. I think I remember just being like, we had like 3 more days left of auditions. I was like, let's just cancel him because I think he's the guy.
Yeah.
So I don't remember exactly how, but I got in touch with him either through his agents where they gave me his email or something, and just started talking to him. And I said, I'd love to offer you the role, but like, we're not ready yet. Like we, mm-hmm. you know, obviously we didn't have the money that we needed. And I think he knew that. I mean, he knows how independent films work. Mm-hmm. He's done a lot, since Napoleon. And, he was like, sure, just keep me updated. And if my schedule allows when you're shooting, I'll cool. do it.
Yeah.
So I was like, great. So we kind of like, I tried to like form a friendship with him, very easy because he's a very likable guy.
Sure.
And we just like went to lunch, bonded over Marvel movies. It's funny, I just like talked to him earlier today, but he, it's like a family man. He just does what he wants. Like he's kind of removed from, you know, Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And I think that's cool. I respect it. He's got 4 kids, like living his life.
He probably did pretty well on Napoleon. I hope so. Right.
Yeah. I don't know the numbers.
Hopefully they renegotiated.
Yeah.
When you canceled the rest of your auditions, did you have other people as famous as John coming in?
There were a couple on the schedule, and I want to say like literally a couple, like two. Mm-hmm. And both of those guys canceled because of a shoot that came up or some gig or something. Mm-hmm. So no, other than that, no.
Yeah, yeah. But, they were, you know, on the list,
right,
when you're kind of like first pitching names.
Yeah, you know? Definitely yeah. recognizable faces for sure. And everyone was great. And it was like my first experience doing like real casting, you know,
I mean,
cast for my student films, but that's different. It's a different scale. And yeah, it was a really interesting experience. And he was not the first person I cast, but he was pretty much the only person I cast through auditions. I kind of had... They reminded me this too. I kind of had Maya and Anna. Do you guys know Maya and Anna? Maya Erskine and Anna.
Yeah.
I kind of had them like audit. Like their agents, I guess, reached out. I knew who they were. Their agents reached out. I had coffee with them first, and then like I had them send in a self tape.
Their agents reaching out. How does that happen?
I think it was, they were Gersh, John's Gersh. I think the script was just a Gersh. Mm-hmm. We had most of our talent was Gersh.
Yeah.
There was a time where we were talking to Gersh about packaging the film. Mm-hmm. They were going to, you know, whatever that means, package our film. We didn't really do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You kind of got it for free, basically.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. Like they sent you all of their clients.
Yeah.
Okay. So bowling alley, you just wanted to shoot a bowling alley, and then, any reason why you wanted to make your main character like a late 30s
30-year-old dude?
Yeah.
I guess I didn't really realize until later on, like after I was like making the film, that it was what my writing partner and I wrote together. So it wasn't like a conscious decision.
And is your writing partner a 30-year-old dude?
No, she is my age. We went to high school together. I guess we just like kind of chose the physical form that was like kind of most different from us at the time. But I put like a lot of myself into the character and didn't really realize that until later, until I was editing. I was like, oh, this is me in a lot of ways. Like the character is, you know, afraid of change. Like when he finds out the bowling alley is closing, like the rug is getting ripped out from under him and he, you know, doesn't know what to do. Does he try and, you know, work against this or does he embrace it? And that was like kind of what I was dealing with in my life, was like change and just learning how to embrace that and knowing that like life doesn't always go the way you plan.
Sure.
I know Bo Burnham, like, got, you know, he made
yeah
a movie about like a young, like a it's the same tween thing, girl, yeah. And everyone's like, why would you write this movie? Really
cool, yeah. Squaresville is about two teen girls, and I would get so, that's my web series, Kendall.
I've heard of it.
No,
oh, really?
Kidding.
Yeah.
Oh, right on. Yeah, it did pretty well back in the day.
Where can I watch it?
On YouTube, youtube.com/Squaresville series.
Wait, Y-O-U-T-U-B?
No, T-O-O-B. Yeah.
Okay.
Tube.
But you know, it's like a ghost world freaks and geeks slice of life show.
Nice.
And I would go into meetings, right, because it got a little bit of heat, and people were like, so you're a dude.
Wait, well, remind me the answer to the question?
So the reason I made a female coming of age slice of life web series is because I was working at Comedy Central at the time, and I was like, what's a thing I can make that I want to make that's interesting and there's an audience that's underserved for that also Comedy Central won't be mad at me for making, basically.
Oh, that's cool.
And then they picked up Broad City, so...
Which is so good. So good.
I guess when I think of Squaresville, I know it's like kind of a distant, there's a distance between them, but like, I don't know, I think of like Ghost World a little bit, you know?
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, yeah. There's...
And, yeah, two teen girls, and there's...
Sarcastic.
There's something like extra biting about it when, I don't know, when it's a girl. Sure. I don't know. That like, it's less expected that they'll be kind of...
Very rude to you?
Yeah. Yeah, or something.
Yeah. But back to the point, though, like when you take meetings and it's like you don't exactly resemble your protagonist, people are confused by it at mm-hmm. first.
Yeah.
Yeah. How did that, because, you know, ultimately you sold your film. How did you kind of navigate that?
Honestly, nobody said anything until like later, until we finished the movie. No one questioned it, which I actually kind of thought was weird.
like everybody, I trust you.
Yeah. Like, and I don't know. I guess it's just like I think I write male characters better. Mm-hmm. And Bo Burnham talked a lot about this in interviews he did, but like, yeah, it's just like I mean it's the same, we share human characteristics and feelings and themes, so it's like it doesn't matter necessarily the physical body that it's in. Mm-hmm. It's like we can all relate to certain things, and sometimes it's just easier for me to write it for somebody who doesn't look like me, you know. Yeah. And I have a lot of male friends who like write female characters a lot better than I do, for sure.
That's so funny.
Yeah.
I used to say that Steven Spielberg has never been a shark. And then a writer once said to me, yeah, you can tell. Which I think is like the perfect shark.
That shark is so wooden.
That's just the best joke ever. We've been friends ever since. Yeah.
No, but I do think it's interesting because it's like Bo Burnham's answer, right, is like, well, I was thinking of like who... What person is like in the most awkward phase of their life? And he's like a girl in eighth grade, right?
Yeah.
And so for you, you're like, and when I close my eyes and picture like the person who's like least equipped,
it's like sad and
like the opposite of charming, unmoored, and confident.
You think of Oren and I, basically. Yeah.
Guy, dudes, 30-something year old dudes.
Now that I've met you guys.
That two podcast host takes place in a watercress farm and a sushi restaurant.
Yeah. I'd watch it.
Yeah.
Can we talk a little bit about financing and how you found the cash to make your movie?
Yeah. You know, I was literally sending emails to anyone and everyone. Looking back, like I was, you know, obviously very green. Mm-hmm. There will always be things I don't know. But now, like having done it once, I feel like I know a lot more. And like looking back, it's like sometimes I'll like read some of my old emails and it's so cringy. That's like I just like slam my laptop shut.
Yeah.
It's like I was reaching out to friends of family, like, you know, mm-hmm. just anybody being like, here's my pitch. Like, have you ever wanted to be a part of a movie? And, you know, like sometimes that works.
And you'd already done the proof of concept. Or no?
Yeah, this was before. That's a good question. Before the proof of concept.
What are you sending them? That's a great.
That's
question.
How the proof of concept came about.
How much did you want to raise for the proof of concept?
I didn't have like an amount to raise for the sizzle reel. It was just like whatever we can get. You know, let's. And it was from a group of investors who also invested in the feature. Like we mm-hmm. built that into the mm-hmm. the feature. You know.
Right. And so were they. Were you striking out and realized like, oh, I need to add a little sizzle? Oh, there we go.
Striking out.
Yeah, spare us the bowling puns.
Okay? Yeah. Actually, we had some of those names as titles before we chose When Jeff Tried to Save the World. I had a lookbook, a very intense lookbook that I spent so long on. It is constantly changed. Like, it was just like 20 pages, very visual. You know, I was like, this is like, I spent so much time on it, you know, like my like
was
keynote.
Was it funny?
No.
But the movie's a comedy, right?
The movie's a dramedy.
Okay.
More of a drama than a comedy. So no, it wasn't funny. And then I made a sizzle reel just because I was like, I know what this looks like and I just need to find clips and put it together. And I was sending the lookbook with the sizzle reel and the script and my pitch in an email. And then I met like a producer who gave me a list of like key connects. He worked at a company that was like up and coming at the time. They started Bondit. Mm-hmm. It's like a financing, like a debt gap financing company.
Are they part of like a conglomerate of a couple?
Yes.
Like Buffalo 8.
That is the company.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes. So like I don't even remember. I think I just like found that they help with like line items, like budgeting and stuff. So I was like, I don't really know how to do this. So I sought out one of the main guys there, Matthew, his help.
Yeah, yeah.
And he sort of was guiding me for the beginning, like first 2 years of making this movie.
Mm-hmm. And no money has like exchanged hands or anything like that. It's
nope.
Just like, hey, you've got a good relationship with this person. You're shooting emails back and forth.
I think, yeah. I mean, we might have, honestly, I think we had some seed money to pay them mm-hmm. for like, because they charge for mm-hmm. like certain things. And right. I'm pretty sure we did pay them. So yeah, I mean, I'd imagine that like, it's difficult to do anything like that without money, but
sure.
We had a little bit that we paid them. But I mean, he was really helpful and sort of like mentored me a little bit towards the beginning, gave me a list of contacts. None of them really ever came through, but it mm-hmm. was like, I got the practice of reaching out to people and talking to people.
Did you call them or email them? Or
email only. I didn't call anybody. I didn't have numbers or anything. And then through a friend of a friend, she mentioned that her friend was starting an angel investor group in Chicago. So I was like, oh, that's a great in for me. It's Chicago and we want to shoot it there. So I got in touch with this guy and they were like, we're doing our first meeting with all of the members. And this, it was at the time like 7 members. Now I think it's up to like 50 plus. And, you know, all these people who just have money and want to sure. invest in films and be a part of films.
Can you describe like the types of people that are in this angel investor group? Or is it like rich dentists? Is
though
I think
it's
joke?
A common yeah. It's funny. Yeah. Right. I think it's like, yeah, lawyers, real estate
people.
Your dad
people. Is the dentist.
Yeah. My dad's the dentist. Then he gets an EP credit on the film also. but no.
He didn't put money in, but he did the crowns for all the
everyone's
actors.
Teeth really
for sure.
Awesome.
For yeah, sure. Yeah. He great. Actually, my mom's also, she's an orthodontist.
Mm. Oh, wow.
She was like,
she's real
yeah,
straight.
She was like, can we get John to like come in and like do Invisalign so I can take photos and like use it? I was like, yeah. I don't know if he's going to want to do that, Mom.
Your mom's pitching branded content.
Yeah. So like, yeah. I remember this was also like a winter break in college at some point. I was super sick. I had a really bad cold and sinus infection, and I flew to Chicago in like the winter, in the middle of winter, to go pitch to them mm-hmm. for like 2 days. And I like the pressure on the flight was so bad with my sinus infection that like one ear, I was like deaf for 2 days.
Whoa.
Like, I've never experienced anything like this.
Let me ask, what took 2 days?
Like, I mean, I went to Chicago for 2 days. Gotcha. I only pitched for like an hour.
Gotcha. Okay.
45
gotcha.
Minutes.
I was like,
boy. But I mean, like my parents are like, stay, yeah, yeah, you know. Sure. So, yeah. So yeah, I pitched to them in a room, 10
was it
people
like
maybe at the
a
top.
A bunch of people pitching their movies or just you?
It was a bunch of people pitching their movies. I want to say like maybe 3 to 5. Not a bunch, but 3 to 5.
Did so you was hold this a stick of dynamite? Was that part of your
That would be good. Yeah, but I remember vividly was in some, I want to say like a really pretty bank building, like mm-hmm. at the top floor, like skyscraper in Chicago. And it was like a blizzard outside.
Oh, that's cool.
It was cool. Everyone was yeah. wearing suits. I was like, yeah. Oh, this is intense. Mm-hmm. I wasn't that nervous though. And that was like my only real pitch meeting for this. Mm-hmm. I skipped pitches. Like I didn't do that a lot. Like I pitched it, you know, talking mm-hmm. more of like conversationally, but like
sure.
my investors are like, there's like a couple family friends. There was that angel investor group, which I pitched to. There was people we met we had like drinks with, you know. Mm-hmm. It was not like formal pitch meetings. Like I wasn't going to studios or anything.
I think that's pretty common, frankly. Yeah. Like I think the pitch thing is kind of, well, it's certainly a lot in TV. You get it, right? And then you have to do the Dog and Bernie show over and over again. But I think there's a lot of like casual drinks and showing your passion and all of that stuff, right? You had to pitch John, I'm sure, but it's really just like sell someone on the vision, not like picture this,
right?
You know? What's craziest is, did you find that the people that are putting in the smallest amount of money want the most of your time?
Absolutely. Yeah.
Like, I'd have a friend that's like, I'm thinking of putting $500 and let's go out to like 7 meals. I'm like, I'm literally spending more money than you want to put in on these meals.
On meals, Yeah, like, no, absolutely. I feel like that's just how it always is.
So after that angel round, though, things kind of started to fall into place, right? Were they the first money in?
Sort of. It was so many years of working on that that it's like it's all a blur. It did not all fall into place. So like we got a little money from them, but they were like, "Oh, we'll give you more. Like if this works out, you know, like if you get the rest of it, we'll give you this." You know, it was a lot of like contingent on certain things. So it was like just a catch 22 situation, and we're still, you know, putting the cast together and stuff. And the main thing was I was in school. So my only time to shoot a feature without taking off was the summer.
Right.
So it was like every summer would go by and I wouldn't have everything that I needed, cast, money, whatever it was. So I was trying to be productive, and like my sophomore year, like summer after sophomore year, I didn't have what I needed. So I like brought 6 Chapman friends to Michigan for the summer, like for like a week. And we made like a pretty much like zero budget feature together as practice, like, and no one's seen it, but it's
will anyone?
Maybe like later in the future. I'm in it. I
like,
acted
like once
in
you're
it.
Famous. You mean like it can be a DVD extra?
Like sure. I acted in it. It's not great.
Are you directing it too?
I did. Yeah. I don't know if I'd ever do that again. Not really an actress, but I was like, we don't really have people, and I guess I'll just do it.
In a weird way, it's just easier.
Yeah. I tried to Joe Swanberg it. You guys know Joe Swanberg? Sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He was over here before you.
Really?
No.
Oh, I was like, wait, really?
You got real excited.
There was a time. No, I mean, there was a time where like in college, like I loved him. Like I went through all of his filmography. Like Drinking Buddies was like my favorite movie for a while. I still really do like Drinking Buddies. I'm also like a huge Jake Johnson fan. Like I think he's a great actor. Yeah. And like that's like top of my list to work with somebody like him. But like, so anyways, I tried to mumblecore feature. Didn't love it, you know, it was like not great for me, but like I tried it and it was practice and I was like, we could show this to investors. Never showed it to anybody. Then the following summer I was like, we still don't have what we need. Maybe we should, people were telling me, I was reading about Whiplash and like I was like, maybe we should make a short, you know. So we condensed the feature, beginning, middle, and end, 20 page script, ended up being 22 minutes short, way too long. That played at like 3 festivals, and then that did the job because,
did the festival play make a difference, or was it really, you just needed to show
I mean, not really financially, but like in other ways, connections.
Did you win any festivals?
We premiered at Sarasota, which is also where we premiered the feature, which I love. Oh, Sarasota. Nice. And we took it
Have you been there into Sarasota?
I haven't. No.
It's really fun. Have you been?
No. Yeah, Matt's been to a lot of festivals.
We took the feature to like 15 and they were fun. Awesome. Yeah. Like awesome regional festivals.
What was your favorite one?
I think Sidewalk.
Oh, I've been to Sidewalk about
in
Sidewalk.
Birmingham, Alabama. Yeah. Really cool.
I think their deadline is like coming. I've got a short that I'm kind of like.
Should submit it
Sure. Oh, cool. Yeah. Maybe I will. The regional festival thing.
Yeah.
It's special, right? Because it kind of reminds you of like
why
you're in the game.
Totally. And
like, you know, it's very communal. And
yeah.
Like everyone's doing it because they love movies, not because there's going to be like a huge bidding war or something, you know?
Yeah. And we like, I mean, of course we, well, are we getting into festivals now?
Sure.
Yeah. Of course we submit, to Sundance and Tribeca, whatever. Because why not? You know, you made a film and if you have the budget, why not submit it and just say that you submitted it? Because you should exhaust all options if you can.
Yeah. To me, the question always is the movie, we just finished filming. The Sundance deadline is in 3 weeks. Like, should we race to get it into the deadline?
I mean, the answer is just build your schedule around the Sundance deadline. Because the nice thing about the Sundance deadline is it's the first. you know, so you kind of it
December?
It, yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. We
it might even be earlier.
No,
actually.
Yeah, actually I think it was October, November. Yeah,
I think that's right.
Yeah. We like we're just like, let's just do a Sundance version, you know, because like they take works in progress.
Right.
We didn't end up working out, but that's okay. I think, you know, had we ever gotten into Sundance or a festival of that top tier, we would have been lost, you know, and it wouldn't have been fun. Whereas like this was my first feature and the experience making it was mostly so much fun. Like the best 18 days of my life were production on this film. You know, had it been like a stressful Sundance experience, I might have felt differently, but like being kind of the big fish with John at regional festivals and he came to like six of them.
Perfect. Awesome. Yeah.
Yeah. He was awesome. He was a great, great sport. And then most of my cast actually came to the Newport Beach one because we were close, you know, but, you know, just because of that, that we were treated really well. And like, that's kind of how I expected. Like you work so hard and make a feature, like, I want film festivals to reward me, you know?
Yeah, sure. I want a free room at a charming ski town.
Fly me up, put me up, and I'll be there for sure.
Right.
But yeah, no, it was, I mean, also like festivals understand that like you spent so much money out of your own pocket, I'm sure, making this movie. Like sometimes it's nice when they help you out.
Do you have any other favorite festivals from that tour?
Yeah, I loved Heartland.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I love, so Sarasota, I have to go in order. Sarasota. IFF Boston's really fun. It doesn't have like a ton of events for filmmakers, but just like the screenings are cool. Heartland is great. Twin Cities is great. Mm-hmm. I was treated like royalty there. It was insane. Tallgrass in Wichita, Kansas.
Yeah.
Sidewalk, Birmingham, Alabama. Oh, Bentonville in Arkansas. That's a newer one. It's like going on
a real specific part of the country.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's going on its fifth year, I think, and it's all about like supporting women and minorities.
That's cool.
And it was great. It was in the place where, like, I mean, that's the town where Walmart was started. So the Waltons are there, and they like, you know, heavily support the festival. Yeah, yeah. And Gina Davis like co-founded it.
Yes, I have heard.
And
of
she's
this
there,
festival.
And all the time, she's fully involved. She's a part of everything.
It's which her, is really her cool. Bow and arrow.
It's her festival. Yeah, yeah. She headlines it.
Yeah, yeah.
It's
she really did cool. the math on exactly how to time it.
Right.
Yeah.
She sets up the screens.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. She's calibrating everything.
Yeah.
My movie played Heartland, but I didn't go.
No, it was cool. The guys who run that festival do a good job. John won. Oh, I won something at Heartland. Mm-hmm. John won at Twin Cities, like best performance or something. Yeah, it was cool. I mean, you know, we were honored. It was it was a really fun time.
And so when does Gunpowder and Sky kind of step in and like...
Which I don't know if we said on the mic yet that they're your distributor.
Me. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Gunpowder and Sky is our distributor. Actually, before most of those festivals, we already had... Cool. Yeah, I mean, like it wasn't like they were really at the festivals we went to because, you know, those are smaller festivals, not a lot of... Every once in a while, you'll meet somebody who works at a fest or works at a distribution company but isn't there for the company. It's just there for fun or something.
Right.
I had... My producer and I were friends with this guy who we actually met when we premiered our short at Sarasota, which is why I said things came from that.
Interesting.
He was then at the time when like after our first two festivals, I think, or our first festival, actually, honestly, it might've been right before our first festival, Sarasota. He was consulting with Gunpowder and Sky and he's like, can I send your movie? Mm-hmm. And he did. And they liked it. So that was cool. And they reached out to us and we're like, I mean, we didn't have any other offers, so...
Sure.
You know, so you didn't have a sales agent or anything?
No. I mean, we were considering it, but we didn't have the budget. And if I'm being, like, perfectly honest, like, a filmmaker right now that I've been listening to a lot is Jim Cummings, Thunder Road. Yeah.
He's been on
the podcast. Yeah, you should listen to the podcast. It's pretty good.
Yeah, I met him this year at Sundance, and he's a good guy. He's funny. But, like, you know, his tweets, like, he tweets a lot of things and, like, take it or leave it. But I think he mostly has a lot of good things to say. And something that he stands by is self-distribution.
Sure.
And all I'll say is after my experience, I will definitely be contemplating self-distributing my next film. Well, and I wish I had heard him say that before I said yes.
Let me recommend our Liz Manischel episodes. Liz works at the Sundance Creative Distribution Fellowship. And has been on the show a handful of times, I think, and is a great resource for that sort of stuff.
Yeah,
and obviously,
I'll check
is
that
kind
out.
Of like working working to bring more transparency to people who are interested in
transparency that. Is a great word because that there's not a lot of that.
Yeah, sucks.
Copy you.
Yeah.
Can I tell you one tip? I might have mentioned it on the podcast before, but something I learned after my movie, you know, basically got screwed over financially on it, was that like whatever deal you make with a distributor, it should always be like a net, like a split of the net profits as opposed to the gross profits. So like basically what every distributor will do is they'll take your movie, then they'll like cut a trailer and they'll make a zillion DVDs or streams or languages. They'll spend a shitload of money. They'll give it to like all their friends, companies that they work with all the time. And then they'll be like, hey, we spent, we lost movie on your film and you won't get anything.
Yeah.
And they have no incentive to not spend money because they're only paying you out of what money is left after all the spending they have.
Right.
But if you make a deal where it's like, hey, we're going to share in the spendings and share in the profits, so whatever's left, we'll split 50-50 instead of 90-10 or whatever ridiculous deal you think you're getting, then you have like a chance of making money, which is something that I learned from our distribution company, Arc Entertainment, who's like screwed over many a filmmaker.
For sure.
And the CFO there literally was like, I was like, what did we do wrong here? Like the movie made like $1.5 million and we got like $30,000.
Like, and it cost, how much did the Hammer cost?
Like $700.
Yeah, yeah. So like,
yeah, like we should have been in the black. We could have been broken even.
Yeah.
But
so frustrating.
Yeah. And he's like, honestly, your deal is just not good. Cause he's like, we have zero incentive. Like they, when my movie came out, they like our biggest deal was at Walmart. Like they were selling the DVD and they made like,
that was a prize from Bentonville, top film, like the winner of the festival that on all shelves, all Walmarts.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, it used to be a thing. I think maybe still, I'm sure
they definitely still is. Maybe not for us filmmakers in LA, but for sure in a majority of places.
I still buy DVDs.
I do too, but not at Walmart.
Right, sure.
But then they're like, they'll make like 80,000 DVDs and they'll charge you like $7 per DVD made. So that's already like
if you want half $1 million. Like
I have, well,
30,000 downstairs.
I don't have 30,000, but I have like 300. And even I'll getting those 300 was like hard to get from the distribution company. And they charge you to ship them to Walmart. And then when they don't sell, they charge you to ship them back. And so that's you're crazy. Spent like $11 per copy of your movie or something. Yeah. And then the company's like, oh yeah, we lost a ton of money on your movie. And you're like, well, you're the idiots that made all these DVDs.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think Gunpowder and Sky is smarter than that for sure.
Yeah. And they don't do, I mean, that nowadays, I think you just spend a lot less money on physically creating materials.
But there's still like a lot of deliverables that are kind of boilerplate.
Yes.
That you can negotiate NTSC, out of. Right? Yeah.
Like 4x3 center
like
cuts.
You don't need Portuguese subtitles unless you've sold to a Portuguese speaking country. Do you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Well, that should be covered hopefully by your international.
Sure. But oftentimes it's not. And it's easy to, you know, that's the thing Liz always talks about is like all of that stuff can be bespoke and should be because it costs the filmmaker money on the, you know.
And one thing I'll say that I've learned from this experience is that like there's a certain amount of like respect that like filmmakers deserve. And that's why I'm so interested in exploring self-distribution because I am always going to be the one who cares the most about my film. Mm-hmm. No matter who the distribution company is, like it's just it's me who wants it and knows what's best for it. So if you're not getting that level of respect, which I feel like I know the size of my movie. It's my first feature. It's not a huge film, but I'm very proud of it. But I also know like to the extent of like how it'll do on iTunes or, you know, should it be in theaters? Probably not. I mean, there's not going to be a huge audience to go see it. So like I was very, and still am very like understanding with the size of and type and the caliber of the film that it is when I talk to my distributors. Mm-hmm. I don't feel that I've gotten the respect that like I'm not as green as some might think. Mm-hmm. So like, I think that that's a big con of the experience for me was like feeling sort of disrespected in that sense, you know?
Yeah. But why do you think filmmakers deserve respect like from the distributor? No, because honestly, I mean, obviously we're all filmmakers and we all respect ourselves and respect each other.
We love filmmakers. That's
well, here's what I'll say.
But their point of view, the distributor is like, We're doing them a favor. This filmmaker, no one's going to see this movie. We're putting it in stores. Like, they should be thanking us.
Transparency. Back to transparency. So if that's the case, say it. Mm-hmm. If it's, did you guys see that Creative Distribution Sundance article that came out of like every distribution company, what they look for? Mm-hmm. So if you
Was
say.
Is that Liz's article?
I think so.
It might be. Yeah. It's great. I mean, it's super
helpful.
There's
only three people in the company. So
yeah.
If you say you're looking for filmmakers to create relationships with, then you better create a relationship with them. Mm-hmm. That's all I'll say.
Interesting. Yeah.
And not be disrespectful. That doesn't create a relationship with the filmmaker. Like, I'm not going to bring you my next film, you know?
Right. Can I ask, how has your life changed? Right? Like, right, because there's obviously, like, a lot of things that are always going to be disappointing, right? Not always, but, like, sometimes you can be disappointed by the rollout of a film and you do things differently, right? But like in terms of the positive, like have things netted out for you? Was there like, you know, any sort of exposure that maybe you couldn't have gotten on your own? Or is it 100% you wish you'd just self-distributed?
I mean, overall, what I got out of the film is like just a huge feeling of accomplishment. Mm-hmm. Like my original intended vision 5 years ago is what is on film. Mm-hmm. And or on digital, I should say. But that's like, you know, for me, like it was a little bit of a boost of confidence because like we filmmakers are, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of self-doubt, you know, like I'm constantly like, oh my God, am I meant to do this? And then like I watch something I did and I'm actually proud of it. And I'm like, oh yeah, like I am meant to do this. I mean, I immediately knew what I would do differently, mm-hmm. but that's sure. with every project, of course, you know? Yeah. And I think the best thing I got out of this film, a little exposure, sure, but nothing. I mean, I never had any real, like I had a couple calls from agents and stuff, but that was it. I mean, nothing came to fruition. I got a manager.
Yeah.
But it was my cast. It was the relationships with my cast, mm-hmm. and which I actually like didn't know I would get out of it. And I don't know, you know, if it'll ever be exactly the same again, but like we were shooting 10 minutes down the road from my childhood home. So every night the cast would come back to my house. My dad would grill for us. Mm-hmm. We played board games. John and I watched movies. Like he showed me movies I had never seen that I definitely should have seen. He showed me The Shining like for the first time. Like it's an experience I'll always be able to. We watched Blades of Glory together also, which was crazy.
Like that me? Was... Not me. Me? Double.
Yeah.
Me?
Double. No, that's double. Exactly what it was. That is exactly how it went. And he is funny because like we have like a row of chairs.
Will Ferrell did all his own.
Yeah. Yeah. We have like a row of chairs and like a couch in front, and we were all sitting, like my crew from California that was staying at my house, we were all sitting in the chairs behind, and he was sitting in the couch in front of us, like looking up at the screen, like pointing up to himself, and we were all just like watching him, like, this is so weird.
So weird. That's so funny.
Yeah. And then also like I'm just like close with my cast, and then Steve Berg, who I've mentioned a couple times, is my writing partner. Now we're writing a movie together, we're working on a TV show that he's in.
And he's an actor that's in your movie.
Yes. Yeah. He's awesome. And just like got a great friendship out of it. Mm-hmm. And John and I are writing a horror film together.
Oh, right on.
Yeah. So.
So what is your, like, tell us about your schedule now. Are you like 8 to 12, right, with John?
Writing with John doesn't exist. It's phone calls. I write. We'll get together every once in a while. But he's like, you know, he's busy with his kids. That's why I was talking to him today. I was like, dude, what? Like, when are we talking? Like, it's a very slow moving process with him. With Steve, it's a little easier. He actually lives like maybe 10 houses down from me. My daily schedule. I started working like when I got back from Chicago after making the movie, finished like the festival circuit. I was like, what am I going to do while I figure out my next project? I want to do something that's like unrelated to film, mm-hmm. But doesn't take up too much of my time and still allows me to be creative and have the energy to be creative. And I have never had a service industry job.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
So I was like, I need to do something. I work at like, I sit on my laptop at Brew all the time. I was like, I'm going to work at this coffee shop. So
funny.
So do you get to sit on your laptop behind the counter?
No, but I days that I don't, I only work there like 2-3 days a week. I was like, I need my schedule to work out so that I can like go shoot commercials. And she's so flexible with my schedule. She like loves it. So she's letting me go shoot a commercial in like 2 weeks. I mean, obviously, if it were to ever interfere with that, I'd have to ditch it. Yeah. But that's why I like it. And I've met so many cool people. I met Sam there. Well, yeah. I knew Sam from Maya and I knew who he was from Maya and Anna. But I met Sam Spiegelman.
Yeah.
I met him there. I mean, I met so many people and gotten great stories and characters from it, which was like kind of why I wanted to do it. So like, yeah, when I'm not working at the coffee shop, I'm working on my laptop, writing with Steve. Steve comes over, you know, a couple times a week. We're working on a lot of things together. He and I like are very similar people, and we just like bounce each, like we could be working on this film and they get like super far, and then all of a sudden we come up with a different idea and we just totally put it aside. And yeah, I don't know,
that's
how
like
productive
Jordan
it is.
Jordan Peele style of writing. He said like just write whatever you're excited about. Like that's why he said Get Out took him like 10 years to write.
Sure.
Well, he was making a TV show and
it was whatever.
Are you getting commercials? Like so, what are your gigs like?
I mean, I've really just started. Like I did six spots for Walgreens. That was like my first thing.
Oh, cool. How'd you get those?
So my producer, Shane, who's based out of Chicago, just started like producing for, or has been for a little bit, producing for Strange Loop, a production company in Chicago. They do music videos, commercials, shorts, documentaries. And so they were like, let's give Kendall the chance. And they did. And we made a music video together first. And then we did the Walgreens stuff, and I'm doing a grocery store spot for them, which I'm like, you know, like a commercial is a commercial. A cool commercial for me is like the Super Bowl Pepsi Cardi B Steve Carell commercial. Like I thought that was, I mean, obviously that's like a huge commercial, but I thought that was cool. Like to get to a point where I can kind of put my own style on things. These have all been like written for me already and given to me. I know the commercial world already, and I'm not a huge fan of it. Like, I don't like rules. I like to be my own person. I don't like to answer to clients. But I'm okay doing it for, like, a week or two at a time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best part is that, like, even if you hate the job, it's over pretty soon.
Yeah, and, like, what it's doing for me is, besides, like, putting money in my pocket, is fulfilling that itch of being on set. And I'm working with my DP from my feature on this upcoming one. So it's like, you know, it's a nice little reunion.
Yeah. I feel like you get the big toys, you know, and so you get to kind of like cherry pick, like, oh, I want to make sure I have this thing
totally
on the small thing that I'm doing later, you know.
I'm filming this thing on Friday where the main shot is like two houses next to each other. So like pretty much as wide shot as you can get without doing like landscape stuff. And my DP is like, I got the lights for us, and we're getting this thing. It's called, I think it's called a BB light. Mm-hmm. It's like 3 18Ks a crane, has like a generator built into it. And he's like, and the producer's like, are you crazy? Like we didn't think you need any lights. We have like no money for lighting. You're just filming the outside of two houses. And he's like, well, look, if I get this, I can cut like three electrics and two grips. Cause the whole thing is like
it's
the self-contained.
Yeah.
That's
unit.
Cool.
Yeah, the Jenny, we can get a way smaller Jenny, and I don't know. So, but yeah, like on an indie film, you never get like one of those things.
Not at all.
But yeah, you get to mess around. I don't know. Jordan Brady, I was just listening to his podcast yesterday, and he talks about how on commercials, the director is kind of like, you're kind of like a tool of the agency.
You're the middle of the sandwich. Yeah.
Yeah, you're like there to take this thing that they've been working on forever and trying to bring it to life. And way that you are happy with, but that they hoped for.
Sure. And I'm like really good at doing that. I'm a people pleaser. Like I'm totally know how to talk to people in that position. The gatekeepers, if you will. But like, I hate it. But I'm just like super good at, like the other day they were like, you know, talk about this product and like how excited you are and passionate you are. It's like, this is absolutely not true, but I can totally BS my like four paragraphs of this, you know? And I'm good at that. So I can do it. It's fine.
Yeah. My production company, they're like, just find a personal story to start your treatment with.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I have like no connection to Lemonade or whatever. No, it wasn't Lemonade. It was like about college tuition. I was like, yeah. So I just like wrote a paragraph about like how I paid for college. And they're like, perfect. I'm like, okay, well, it's not like interesting. I'd never tell anyone the story, but sure. It's like a personal connection. And then I got the job.
There you go. Well, Kendall, this is great. Where can listeners find out more about you? How can they keep track of all of the awesome stuff you're making?
Social media, or I guess like my website, because that has material and my social media on it. So it's all in one. It's just my first and last name, films.com. So KendallGoldbergFilms.com.
Two L's in Kendall?
Yeah, KENDALL Goldberg.
How many people think that you're a guy?
It happens every once in a while. And especially like if it's to my advantage of being a female in an email, I'll specify. I'll be like, yeah, I'm a female filmmaker. You know, because like now everyone's like, yeah, female filmmakers. I'm like, yes, I am a female filmmaker.
There you go.
I mean, I'm a filmmaker, but like when it helps to specify. Or I'll attach a little photo or something.
Well, the very first time I saw your name, I was like, I feel like I know a couple other Kendalls that are guys.
So I don't. I know two guy Kendalls. I know like four girl Kendalls.
There's like a wine company, right?
Kendall Jackson.
Yeah, Kendall Jackson. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what was in my
I have a good friend named Jackson, so we make that joke, yeah.
That's, Halloween costume idea.
Yeah, right? Yeah, we can be a bottle of wine. But yeah, like just my website.
Your website, perfect. Yeah. Awesome. Well, shall we jump into unpaid endorsements?
Yeah, let's do it.
Unpaid endorsements!
Well, I watched two things on Hulu recently, but they kind of reminded me of something I saw forever ago, and I also just had a conversation about that I don't think I've endorsed yet. But I watched Sorry to Bother You. It's on Hulu.
Mm-hmm.
It was good. I was expecting to be like bowled over. And actually, this other podcast, Making Movies is Hard, Timothy, like, was talking about how it was made by someone that hadn't really made a lot of movies before. And so he like broke all the rules. And I was like, yeah, that's probably what makes it awesome. And then when I watched it, I was like, oh, I can kind of see where that opinion came from. It's good. I think you should watch it, especially if you have Hulu. But yeah, I don't know. It was interesting. I thought it like kind of sagged a little in the middle, but
totally.
But it's a fun movie and super like original and creative and like wacky in an interesting way. And I saw Free Solo, which, you know, won the Oscar.
Crazy movie.
Which I probably heard way too much of what it was about before I saw it, because I kind of felt like I saw every turn coming. But it reminded me of, have you guys seen Somme?
Oh, the wine one.
Sure, yeah, the wine documentary.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, older, I haven't seen it, but they're literally screening it at Chapman tonight, and I got like an email. Yeah.
It is like probably one of the best documentaries I've ever seen, and it's just about wine tasting. I haven't endorsed it.
I don't think so. No. Yeah.
But it reminded me when you were talking, Kendall, about how every summer would come by and you're like, oh, I missed this summer and I have to wait another year. And it's like about these guys that have to take they're trying to become master sommeliers, and there's one time a year you can take this test. And if you don't pass it, it's like another year where you can't, you know, your life is ruined.
That's one of those movies that like you're just so happy for the filmmaker that all of the characters work out so well. Like there's a perfect villain in that movie, and there's like the heroes are great underdogs, and it's like it would be easy to start shooting that movie and be like, well, there's not really a movie here, you know.
Yeah.
Like the subject is really interesting, but the characters that fill out that world are great.
Yeah. So I bet many of our listeners are aware of this movie, but if you've heard of it, you should see it. Somme. I think it's on Netflix, S-O-M-M-E.
It was Once Upon a Time. I think there might be sequels as well.
Yes, there is a sequel coming out. So I think
is that right?
And there was a movie called Sour Grapes that I heard is also amazing, which is about someone who made like a real crappy wine and basically convinced everyone that it's like the most incredible wine in the world, like that it's worth like hundreds of dollars a bottle. And
that makes me think of that episode of Parks and Rec where they're like looking for a sommelier. So how do you say it?
Sommelier.
Yeah. Tom, you know what I'm talking about? Do you guys see
that? I don't remember this episode. No.
Tom is like looking for a sommelier for his bistro that he's opening. And Billy Eichner, who plays like Crazy Craig,
is
like really, really good, but like very intense. And then Aubrey Plaza's character, April, is like, doesn't know anything, but she pretends that she knows everything about it and signs up and like convinces them to like mix red and white wine and make a rosé. Like, yeah.
Which is famously not how you make rosé.
No.
cool.
Kendall, what do you got?
Yeah. So, and this is just like anything, right?
Yeah.
I had a friend recently take me to try what I think might be the best breakfast burrito I've ever tried.
Oh, okay. Mm. All right.
Especially listening. In Los Angeles.
I'm ready.
Cause I always seek that out. Uh-huh. Originally I was living the Oaks Gourmet life on Franklin.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. From breakfast burritos?
Oh, Yeah, their bacon egg burrito is incredible.
So I'm very passionate about breakfast burritos, but I'm vegetarian. Oh, so okay. It's a slightly different list, I'm sure. Yeah.
Well, this place was called is called Kofax.
Fuck yes.
On it Fairfax.
Is the best. That was the right answer.
Oh my God.
Oh man, that is so good.
I've been thinking about it for 4 days.
I don't know. Like what, like...
Like Third Beverly?
Yeah, right? Kind of like by John and Vinny's and
okay.
Golden yeah, State and all those places. He was yeah. driving. Yeah. So.
C-O-L-F-A-X?
No, Kofax.
C-O-F-A-X?
Yes. But yeah, that was it incredible. Is next level. Yeah. Oh my God. And then the other thing that I will endorse, I am biased because Maya and Anna are in my movie and I love them. But Pen 15, I heard somebody already did this, but I'm going to say it because Pen 15 is such a great show. I binged it in like a week, I think. I would have watched it all in one day if I had the time. Mm-hmm. But like, they're just fucking phenomenal in it. It's so good. It's so funny. I mean, it's so cringy and like relatable and like makes me think of all the worst memories of middle school, which is honestly the best to think about now that I'm like actually like, my own person and confident and like know what I'm doing with my life. But no, they're so good. Like, and it, not only is it so funny, but like there was a moment, I think it was the episode, yeah, because I texted Maya about this. Like, there's an episode about racism, and like these girls are being mean to Maya for being Asian and looking the way that she looks, and she like looks at herself in the mirror. It's like a close up on her looking at herself in the mirror, like yelling at herself for being Asian and just like crying. And I was like, oh my God, I started crying watching. I was like, this is so good. Like, it's really just I hope their careers skyrocket from that. I think they are.
I have a hunch they're right.
Yeah, no, it's great to see that it's getting the respect that it deserves, especially within the industry. A lot of comedians tweeting about it and stuff.
Yeah.
The person that endorsed it on our podcast is the head of like TV at Shondaland.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's and amazing.
Was as emphatic as you are.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
Oh, I love them.
I just watched an episode with my, I've only seen this one episode, but my wife's like, do you want to just like watch an episode with me? It was like the first episode. She's like, no, just like the one I'm on.
The third?
No.
The masturbation one?
The third one's good, but we watched the thong one.
Oh, it was incredible.
Yeah.
It was so funny. Simple,
but did you
watch
it? I'm not that far into it. Yeah.
Basically just like, I guess that's the age where girls start wearing thongs. Yeah. And like when you put the thong on, it's like you're like a different person. Yeah,
like a magical unicorn. But like it's funny seeing them too. Like after having like worked with them and hung out with them a bunch, like they're ultimately playing themselves. Like they have such great chemistry between the two of them. It's like just themselves. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously dressed as like 13-year-olds, you know?
Right.
They're just really funny together.
The rest of the cast is just, I mean, the casting on that show is
amazing.
Like insane.
Yeah.
The mom on that thong episode is like, who are you?
Yeah.
And there's this lady Pooh.
Oh, yeah.
Like this woman that doesn't have any teeth, and I can't tell if she knows she's on a TV show or not.
Oh,
like,
so good.
Yeah. Anyway, cool. Matt, you got anything?
Yeah. I've got kind of a specific and a kind of a general idea as well. So I follow this comic book artist named Jen Bartel, who is kind of a big deal. She's like draws for a lot of awesome books and has like kind of like a Lisa Frank style. Ooh. Of like hyper colorful sort of stuff.
Brings me back to middle school.
Yeah.
Or actually elementary school.
Yeah, but then flip it around, it's updated. So it's like really cutting edge, really awesome stuff. So it's always just nice to see her stuff kind of showing up in my Twitter feed. But more pertinently, she's a real advocate for artists and constantly is talking about the different facets of being a working illustrator. And it's strikingly similar to being a freelance director, but just one step removed. And so I find it to be really inspiring and comforting and interesting to see the parallels, and also kind of you have a little bit of a view into a different world, and maybe that informs the way you think about your own problems or life or whatever. So in general, I would say Jen Bartel is an incredible artist. She's at Hey Jen Bartel on Twitter, but in general, just like follow a few other artists that you like, whether they're comics or writers or, you know, whatever. And if you can find a few people that are those figureheads, your Jim Cummings of the world, that are kind of talking about the issues that we're all thinking about all the time, that can be a real lightning rod to kind of assess the way you're, you know, thinking about your own life. I always joke Jim is my favorite cult leader.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
I mean, yeah, it's kind of like what's happening right now.
Yeah.
Same, I mean, the same thing. Like I'm always a Duplass fan. Like I've been a Duplass fan since the Puffy Chair.
Yeah.
And like they're kind of the same way. They're building their own like empire
without,
of people.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, awesome. Kendall, this was great.
Yeah, thank you. This was really fun, guys. Yeah. I can't believe that this is the crazy thing about life. You know, maybe our paths have crossed too. We just don't know it. But like the fact that you came
at the Starbucks Reserve, definitely.
Hey, is that where you spend time?
Their seating is really comfortable.
I totally agree. They also have a good natural light.
Oh, yeah. Good point.
They have good natural light. Yeah.
And Brew's got a good parking lot too.
Brew has a decent parking lot and Brew great has, natural light.
Well, yeah. Brew has good seats and not so good seats.
Yeah,
oh,
that's true.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Remember when we went with Ulrich and I was just like in the sun the whole time?
Yeah, oh,
yeah.
Especially because we just put new shelves on the wall and there's
is that right?
tables that are like under the shelves.
Oh, that's yeah.
No, Brew, I mean, if you want to go to a cool place, go to Brew.
Yeah, Brew's a good place.
I mean,
to
the way it's even spelt is ridiculous.
Awesome. Well, if you want to find out about everything Kendall's doing and us as well, you can go to the show notes at justshootitpod.com. You can follow us on all social media. We're tweeting more and more every day. Follow us on Instagram especially. That stuff is really fun.
At Just Shoot It Pod.
At Just Shoot It Pod. It's all at Just Shoot It Pod. I'm at Mr. Matt Enlow.
And I'm at Smitey Pyleg on Twitter and at O Kaplan on Instagram. I have a bunch of new Instagram followers because I worked with this like Instagram star and she like tagged me in her photos and then I got like
best,
a thousand
right?
new followers in like a day.
Influencers.
This episode was edited by Jay McAuliffe. It was produced by Madeline Rosewatt and our webmaster is Ewan Williams. And the music you're listening to is from the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar. And if you are still listening, go to iTunes, leave us a review. That would be awesome. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.